Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review, designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1962, that Robert Zimmerman of Hibbing, Minnesota, legally changed his name to what? Did he change it to A, Prince, B, Bob Dylan, C, John Denver, or D, Michael Jackson? So whom did Robert Zimmerman become on this day in 1962? Question number two, it was on this day, back in 1958, that Billboard magazine introduced its Hot 100 chart. What was the first number one song on that chart? Was it A, Elvis Presley's Hound Dog, B, Bobby Darin's Mack the Knife, C, Ricky Nelson's Poor Little Fool, or Sheb Woolley's Purple People Eater? 1958, first chart topper for Billboard's Hot 100. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 2nd. Well, it was on this day, back in 1929, that the classic song Ain't Misbehavin' was recorded by Fats Waller. And it was 56 years ago today, 1963, that the Beatles made their final appearance at the Cavern Club in Liverpool, England. They had performed nearly 300 shows at that club since 1961. 1963 today was their last performance at that club. And in country music news, we have this book review, Songs of America, Patriotism, Protest, and the Music That Made a Nation. This is written by John Meacham and Tim McGraw. The review of the book is published in The Week magazine, July 26, 2019, issue. Since the first marches to revolution, Americans have been putting new words to old tunes and blurring the lines between loyalty and liberty, said Beth Waltermath in the Chattanooga, Tennessee Times Free Press. In John Meacham and Tim McGraw's loose new survey of the music that has helped define America, the first surprise is that song lyrics urging rebellion were circulating years before the first shot of the Revolutionary War, as in the Liberty Song, a 1768 call to arms written to the tune of a British march. From there, the Pulitzer-winning author and Grammy-winning country star hopscotched through time to explore how we've debated our ideals through songs of patriotism and protest. Handsomely packaged book doesn't match its promise, said Ken Emerson in the Wall Street Journal. Meacham borrows from his past writings to supply the main narrative, while McGraw adds brief box commentary about individual songs. But the song selection is idiosyncratic. The music of each song is rarely described, and even lyrics become scarce once the authors reach the copyright era. In the discussion of Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?, no lyrics are quoted at all. Fortunately, ignoring the obvious can make room for interesting discoveries. Did you know, for example, that FDR hoped to make Anchors Away his 1932 campaign song before settling on Happy Days Are Here Again? Songs often serve as soldiers in a cultural proxy war, and the authors don't overlook such clashes, said Allison Stewart in the Washington Post. Meacham notes how Ronald Reagan misinterpreted Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA as a patriotic anthem, for example, and he devotes ample space to the moment when the Dixie Chicks derailed their career by speaking out against the U.S. war in Iraq. But Meacham is often too cautious, perhaps too optimistic. To him, our American songbook, in all its sprawling messiness, unites more than it divides. And in classical music news, we have this article published in ClassicFM.com by Rosie Pentreath, published on July 15, 2019, entitled Young Violinist Katya Sukhanova Tragically Dies from Lethal Drug Combination. The 17-year-old daughter of Russian bankers and philanthropist Igor Sukhanov and Natasha Sukhanova has been reported to have taken a mix of cocaine and ketamine, which is known as Calvin Klein, and is currently doing the rounds at parties. Sukhanova's father found her dead at the family's Kensington home last month, just days after turning 17 and having recently performed a lunchtime recital at the Royal Opera House, Crush Room. Speaking to the Telegraph, Mr. Sukhanov said, "My daughter was so happy, and she had such a bright future. She was such a smart girl, and she made one bad choice. What can we parents do?" She had just performed at the Royal Opera House, and she was planning for the future, her father told the Telegraph. She even had a board on her bedroom wall with all her concerts perfectly laid out. Then one morning I came in, and she was lying dead on the floor. A concert in Sukhanova's memory will take place on 11 August at Italy's Suona del Golfo Festival. And in jazz and blues music news, we have this article written by Bill Coleman, published in Quora.com on the 7th of June, 2012, entitled, "Was Jazz Derived from Blues or Vice Versa?" My understanding of it is that jazz grew from blues and other stuff rolled together. Military marches, French opera, chamber music, minstrel pop, Dixieland, all fused with the African-influenced gospel, work songs, and traditional blues singing. I think it is more helpful to think of blues not as a form or genre, but as a completely different type of music, as different as traditional Chinese music is to European music. I consider it to be a different musical language, constructed from harmonies and intervals not found in Western music as defined in the circle of fifths. Most early jazz instruments were locked into Western notes, and jazz was originally a large ensemble affair, so the off-pitch blues tonality was dropped out to an extent. Later, with solo improv sections becoming popular, you can hear the blue tonality come back in. The crux of jazz is that its form and structure are rooted in Western theory. I mentioned the circle of fifths. Traditional jazz progressions are all derived from this, but at the same time, the influence of blues is undeniable and core to the melodic and harmonic expression within jazz. They are inextricably linked. You really have to listen to the blues and let it soak into your spirit over time to get it and hear it in jazz, a journey I am still on and hope to never finish.
Send her home to me.
And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Sound Advice About Hearing Aids. Here's what you need to know about the latest technology to make your world pitch perfect. This is written by Ken Budd and published in AARP Bulletin, April 2019 issue. Hearing loss affects about 25% of Americans age 55 to 64 and 33% of those 60 to 74. Yet 80% of people who would benefit from a hearing aid don't use one. The Hearing Loss Association of America, HLAA, reports. High costs are a big reason, but that may change. A 2017 law will allow hearing aids to be sold without an audiologist consultation. The Food and Drug Administration, FDA, still has about 16 months to issue regulations before such over-the-counter devices will hit the stores. What can you hear? Sounds are a combination of loudness, decibels, and frequency, which is the pitch, hertz. Common hearing loss from aging can limit our ability to hear quiet sounds and also often those at high frequencies, even at louder volumes. Human speech is across a range of frequencies. We often lose the ability to hear consonants first as they tend to register at a higher frequency. So why are hearing declines? Well, age-related hearing loss results largely from damage to hair cells in the inner ear. And age isn't the only cause. Conditions such as high blood pressure and diabetes have been linked with hearing loss. It can also be hereditary, and smokers also have higher rates. High-volume workplace sounds can take a toll. Hearing issues are the most common service-related disability for the U.S. military. Hearing loss can also lead to depression, anxiety, and poor relationships, the AAA reports, and it can increase your risk of dementia. When people in their 50s and 60s with hearing loss began using hearing aids, their scores improved in tests measuring working memory and processing speed, according to a study at the University of Texas at El Paso. So what are five current ways to improve your hearing? Well, there's behind the ear, also referred to simply as BTE, hearing aids. The microphone and processor sit in a casing behind the ear. The speaker rests in the ear canal. The cost is, on average, $2,400 per ear. There's also custom in the ear. That's ITE hearing aids. The audio technology is encased in a custom molded plastic shell that fills the outer part of the ear canal. Average cost here, $2,400 per ear. And then there's cochlear implants, and they use electric currents to stimulate auditory nerve fibers. They are for people with profound hearing loss, and the cost includes the evaluation, surgery, device, and rehab, can be as much as $100,000, although most of that cost should be covered by private insurance or Medicare. Coming in at number four is personal sound amplifiers. These are PSAPs. They turn up the volume, and they may cost as little as $20, but quality units generally sell for $250 to $300. And then finally, over-the-counter hearing aids. What they will do, once available, they are expected to have the ability to increase the volume on certain types of sound, and the cost is yet to be determined. This article ends by addressing the future of hearing. In-ear devices will do more than improve sound. The newest tech, streaming audio. Hearing aids can connect to your smartphone, computer, TV, or other devices via Bluetooth wireless technology. The audio then streams directly into your ears, as if you were wearing earbuds. Then there are smartphone apps. Hearing aids can be adjusted this way, giving more control to the consumer. Some apps will change the setting automatically based on the environment. For example, the GPS on your phone can detect if you're in a car or at a bar and will alter the amplification accordingly. There are rechargeable batteries on the horizon. Typically, hearing aids primarily use tiny replaceable batteries, but some now have built-in batteries that can be plugged in to recharge as you sleep. And in the future, just as smartphones are more than phones, hearing aids will become health aids that monitor your temperature and pulse. Sensors will detect falls and alert an emergency contact. Because older Americans are likely to use their hearing aids every day, they may be the best devices for monitoring an aging relative who lives alone. Developers are looking at other ways hearing aids can become in-ear audio assistants. If the doorbell rings, your hearing aid will tell you the doorbell is ringing. Eventually, with facial recognition, your hearing aid might tell you Cindy is at the door or the FedEx truck is outside, says Jackie Clark, immediate past president of the American Academy of Audiology, AAA. Could hearing loss be reversed? In 2017, researchers at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital announced that they had regenerated auditory hair cells in mice by manipulating certain genes. Novartis is running a 5-year clinical trial to regenerate hair cells. The trial is expected to conclude this very year. At Indiana University, researchers have grown inner ear tissues from stem cells. A 2017 paper published in Nature showed that genetic editing could prevent progressive hearing loss in mice. Similar procedures eventually could be used for people.
I want to take you to heaven. That would make my day complete. But you and me ain't no movie star. What we are is what we are. We share a bed, some loving, and TV.
And in rock and pop music news, we have this article entitled Muscle Car Madness. This is Alice Cooper singing You and Me in the background as an introduction. This article published in AARP Magazine, 2018. My dad worked for Plymouth. The first family car I can remember was a 1954 Plymouth Belvedere. Then in 1955, we got another one, and in 56, 57, 58. Our car always had plastic seats. If you slid across, you'd get a shock. In high school, I bought a 66 Fairlane GT390. Canary yellow with black racing stripes and four on the floor. It was brand new. I was playing in the Spiders then, and I was clearing $250 a weekend. Everybody else was driving their parents' station wagon to school, and we'd drive up in these cars because we were the Spiders. I have to buy and sell cars. I love that. When I drive a new car home, my wife, Cheryl, just goes, "Oh, that's nice, dear." Right now, I've got a white 63 Avanti. I've got a 2015 convertible Hemi Barracuda, lime green, thank you. I think 4 or 5 cars are the most I've ever had at one time. That's as many as I have room for. No matter how old you are, you never lose the feeling that cars are freedom. Starting when you're 16, you don't have to wait for mom to take you. You don't have to wait for dad to pick you up. And your car, especially your first car, ends up being your best friend. The Embers, I Love Beach Music, introduces our local music news. In Raleigh, North Carolina, we have this from visitnorthhills.com. Beach Music Series, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on August the 8th and the 15th. Location, the Commons, North Hills Mall, Raleigh. Doors open at 5 p.m. Celebrating its 12th season, the Thursday evening Midtown Beach Music Series at North Hills is popular with event-goers from around North Carolina, hosting over 125,000 guests throughout the 18-week session during the summers. The series offers the best of beach music on warm summer nights and features shag dancing, a time-honored tradition in the South. One of the few local free concerts available to the public, this event hosts those looking for a fun night out with an amazing lineup. The 12th season of this time-honored series is sure to be a fantastic one.
Ooh, ooh, Miss Chris. 39, 21, 40 shade.
And by the way, if you're interested in beach music, you can learn more by going to Amazon.com and taking a look, if not buying, Carolina Beach Music Encyclopedia 2018. While rock groups such as the Beach Boys and Jan and Dean defined the beach music of Southern California during the 1960s, a different R&B-influenced sound could be heard along South Carolina's Grand Strand. Drawing on extensive research and exclusive interviews, this richly illustrated reference work covers the music, songwriters, and performers who contributed to the genre of classic Carolina beach music from 1940 to 1980. Detailed entries tell the stories behind nearly 500 classic recordings with release dates, label information, chart performance, and biographical background on more than 200 artists. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1962 that Robert Zimmerman of Hibbing, Minnesota, legally changed his name to what? Was that Prince, Bob Dylan, John Denver, or Michael Jackson? So whom did Robert Zimmerman become on this day in 1962? Correct answer, answer B, Bob Dylan. As noted on 52418 in WMGK.com, Robert Allen Zimmerman became Bob Dylan on August the 2nd, 1962. He had been using the name since 1959 when he was taking classes at the University of Minnesota. In his 2004 autobiography, he states, "The first time I was asked my name in the Twin Cities, I instinctively and automatically, without thinking, simply said, Bob Dylan. It took him some time to get used to people calling him Bob. Prior to becoming Bob Dylan, he used the names Elston Gunn and Robert Allen. He actually used the name Elston Gunn while performing as a high school student. The Elston Gunn name thing was only temporary," he mentions in Chronicles. "What I was going to do as soon as I left home was just call myself Robert Allen. As far as I was concerned, that was who I was. That's what my parents named me. It sounded like the name of a Scottish king, that Bob, and I liked it. There was little of my identity that wasn't in that. Many fans assume that Bob changed his name because of his affinity for the poet Dylan Thomas. Dylan refuted that theory during an interview with the New York Times in 1961. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1958 that Billboard magazine introduced its Hot 100 chart. What was the first number one song on that chart? Was it A, Elvis Presley's Hound Dog? B, Bobby Darin's Mack the Knife? C, Ricky Nelson's Poor Little Fool? Or D, Sheb Woolley's Purple People Eater? 1958, first chart topper for Billboard's Hot 100? Correct answer is answer C, Ricky Nelson's Poor Little Fool. As noted in songfacts.com, Poor Little Fool was written by 17-year-old Sharon Sheely, a high school student in Newport Beach, California. Female songwriters were rare at the time, and when the song climbed to number one in the U.S., she became the first woman to have composed an American chart topper on her own. Sheely later co-wrote songs with Eddie Cochran. Cochran was killed in a car accident, and Sheely, who was by then his girlfriend, was also involved in the accident but survived despite getting badly injured. She also collaborated with Jackie DeShannon on hits for artists like Brenda Lee. Sheely and DeShannon were the first female writing team to have significant success in the pop realm. Sheely died in 2002 at the age of 62 of complications following a cerebral hemorrhage. So let's close out today's program with that number one hit from 1958, Ricky Nelson singing Poor Little Fool.
I used to play around the parts, hasten at my call. But when I met that little girl, I knew that I would fall for a little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.
She left me with a broken heart, won her victory, poor little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.